Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Folks, on December 7th, you'll have an opportunity to vote on a number of constitutional amendments, one being the makeup of the Judiciary Commission and how they conduct themselves, the membership expanding some of those issues, and allowing the Supreme Court to do certain activities as well. We had former Judge Robin Geruso on last week speaking in opposition to this proposed amendment. She was also a former member of the Judiciary Commission. And today we have Laura Rodrigue, co-founder of Bayou Mama Bears and former Orleans prosecutor, speaking in on behalf of the constitutional amendment as proposed. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, Laura, if you would, let's first take up the issue of the composition. I think there's one court of appeal judge that's appointed by the Supreme Court, three lawyers with differing years of experience appointed by the Court of Appeal Association, and three citizens, non-lawyers, non-elected officials, a whole bunch of nons there that are provided membership by the district. They're put up by the District Judges Association. This bill seeks to expand that by providing two appointments by the Speaker of the House, two by the President of the Senate, as well as one by the governor. So we would go from, I believe, 7 to 12, if my math is correct. Let's talk about why that, and what difference does this seek to make?
Sure. So it will add five additional members to this judiciary. And the interesting thing about just the appointment process of it is these five members, for the first time, will be members that are not appointed by judges. So there is, you know, a lot of discussion about the fact that the entire panel of people now who currently make up the Judiciary Commission are appointed by judges. So it's sort of like the fox guarding the hen house there. These additional members will be appointed by people who are not judges and therefore don't really, you know, it's a way to get some more accountability to the judiciary without sort of judging their own. We have outside people who will now be taking a bird's eye view at what's going on inside the judiciary. And that's just basically the composition, the change that we will see here. And what it's seeking to do is bring accountability to the judiciary, which has been, of the three parts of the criminal justice system, when we talk about the police, the DA, and the judges are, we hear the least about them. I like to say people can rarely even name two judges in criminal court, much less the multitude that are actually there affecting criminal matters on a daily basis in all the parishes throughout the state. So there is a big need to get a bird's eye view and much more accountability of what's going on in the judiciary. What are the judges doing? Every day, the most violent criminals in the city appear before these judges. And I think it's time that the public know and that there be a review panel reviewing what's actually going on in these courts as these cases appear before the judges.
But it doesn't really change much, though, right? I mean, in the end, you're in the minority. So let's say that these are five individuals that are really interested, as you just outlined, and looking at a bunch of these things, but you still have seven appointments made by judges versus five made by other individuals, unless you said they all, you know, have a different point of view than the judges. It doesn't change much. Majority rules.
Well, yeah, the majority will rule, of course, but I would say that we would assume under that scenario that all of the judges who are currently on the commission would be in disagreement every time with the new five members. But the one thing that's important that it does change is that it says that an investigation shall be instituted on recommendation by the commission. And we don't have that right now. What that means is right now, the Supreme Court or the commission does not have to investigate complaints that are brought before them. The amendment will change that language to say that with this commission, an investigation by the Judiciary Commission shall be instituted on recommendation by the commission or by directive from a majority of the court. And that's a big deal. That means it's not discretionary. We want to see these investigations happening. We do not want to see things swept under the rug when we have complaints about what judges are doing in court. This will change that. So whether the majority votes with it or not, we're forcing an investigation to at least happen here. And I think that once an investigation happens, you're going to see those current members start to make some real tough decisions about whether they're going to protect their own when you know you have five new members here who are going to be saying, we see something wrong. Something isn't right. We smell something foul here.
You used an example the other day in your discussion with the media. There's a and I think you realize and recognize this. There's a fine line between the exercise of discretion by a judge and then actually following the letter of the law, right? A lot of times, and I think a lot of the frustration, I know that you and I have had many conversations. I've been completely frustrated by the exercise of discretion because I believe that discretion leads to disproportionate impact, disproportionate outcome. And I very much favor an if X, then Y system. And that way we don't have to engage in that argument anymore, right? Most people are against that. They want to be able to move the system one way or the other, whether it's financial means or otherwise, whatever. But what is going to happen? Because I think a lot of people get wrapped up in misunderstanding what it is that the Judiciary Commission can sometimes investigate. Because if it's discretion, unless it's clear that it violates the law, there really isn't anything they can do, right?
So what I would say to that is this conversation sort of really got under the magnifying glass when we had the French Quarter shooter last week. And unfortunately, now that's been overshadowed by the, you know, six mass shootings we had in the last 2 days. But what we're talking about here is the judges have a discretion. And what that means is you might have a sentencing range. So you might have the judge can decide in a particular crime whether he wants to sentence anywhere between the range of 5 to 15 years. And the judge has the discretion to make that decision. What we saw in some of the cases that are pending in court, and this happens all across the state, is in order to get a plea deal, the district attorney will reduce charges. That's what we saw in the French Quarter shooting. The charges were reduced, which dropped any mandatory minimum jail time. So now there is discretion for the judge to give the shooter probation. So they now have the discretion to give a sentence of probation. So the first sort of issue to be addressed is should those charges should have been dropped, dropping out any mandatory minimum jail time when there were some crimes of violence in there. Now we get to the judges where we say the judge has the discretion to give probation. In this particular case, and we can use this example because we can follow it through to the end, in this particular case with the French Quarter shooter, the judge decided to give probation. So he gives probation, and then during the course of the probation, we see multiple violations of the terms of his probation. We have the ankle monitor violation, something like 40 different violations. And we find out that the judge did not revoke him and make his sentence executory. In other words, returning him to jail, although he had violated the terms of his probation multiple times. I mean, dozens and dozens of times, in fact, in that case. Now, we're saying the judge has discretion, we call it, whether he wants to give probation initially and whether he wants to ultimately revoke that probation. Now, there is also a legal principle called the abuse of discretion. So after a judge makes that ruling, the district attorney could file a writ to a higher court and say, we believe this judge has abused his discretion, meaning this is a person who is violent. He has a propensity for violence. We see that he cannot maintain the conditions of probation. We think he'll be a danger to the community, and this is an abuse of discretion. We did not see the DA do that in that particular case, but it's certainly something that could be reviewed. Is a judge abusing their discretion, and has it affected public safety? In fact, in this particular amendment, they will add that there will be a review to see if a judge is committing malfeasance in office. So essentially we're saying, are these judges stepping out of the bounds of what we call discretionary and abusing the role that they play, which has in criminal court cases, of course, this will affect civil court judges as well, but in criminal court cases, for this example, has that abuse of discretion or the malfeasance created a situation that has caused the death of multiple people in the community? But for those decisions, would the offender have been in jail, would not have been out and to harm more people? These are very serious conversations that need to be happening. There is a direct link from one to the other.
I couldn't agree more on that. I'm just kind of curious how this plays out, though, because and I was interested in, because I think a lot of the contributing factors to malfeasance, the judiciary commission has authority to look at that now.
Right.
Whether they've been reluctant to or not, I don't know. I don't really follow them that often, except when I think you have egregious acts by judges.
Right.
They come down and it's a slap on the wrist and you get put on double secret probation when you have intention.
Right.
You have intentionality. You've got everything there. I mean, you've got the spoken word of some of these elected officials saying, I don't believe in this law, and therefore this is the way I'm going to. That's not how this works.
Correct. Exactly right.
You know,
and look,
in those cases, it just seems to me that they ought to come down hard with the hammer. I don't care if they were elected by the people or not. The fact of the matter is that you should not be electing an ideology. You're electing an impartial jurist who's supposed to apply the law. And they
Correct.
When they come out and they say, I don't agree with that law, well, I'm sorry. That's not your role. You know?
And, you know, the fact that most people they have no idea really what the judiciary is doing, especially, you know, for people like you who follow closely all of these issues and who do pay close attention to public safety. The fact we're not sure, as you say, how this will play out, but the fact that it's forcing investigations is important. And the fact that we need to know more about what is going on, why are there double secret probationary periods of judges and nobody in the public knows about it? I'd certainly like to know when I go to vote if a judge has been investigated for abusing his or her discretion on multiple occasions. And one of the examples that I give, and I know you'll understand this, is when we compare the scrutiny of law enforcement to the scrutiny that the judges get. Law enforcement officers are confronting the exact same individuals that go into court in front of the judges. Law enforcement officers have to wear a body camera. When they confront these individuals, they have no idea what their criminal history might be. And they have to make split-second decisions about what to do when they come across these particular individuals. Law enforcement officers are subject to intense review. They are analyzed minute to minute on every decision they make on a scene. They are sued in civil court all the time. They are constantly being reviewed for criminal charges. And they're confronting the exact same individuals that walk into a courtroom that the judge has to make a decision on. And the judge gets to know their criminal background. The judge is not on the street. It's a controlled environment. He gets to know everything about their history. He gets to ask any questions he wants. He gets to make a very informed and well thought out decision about whether to release him. And when he does and that person kills someone, there are zero consequences for a judge. And the judge should be held to the same standard in terms of our criminal justice system that the law enforcement officers are being held to. They're confronting the exact same people in those dangerous situations. So there is simply the level of scrutiny is not even close here. I mean, nobody can say anything about what's going on in the judiciary, and that is hopefully what this amendment will start to correct.
Yeah, and hopefully so. I mean, and they have the benefit of hindsight, right? I mean, you know.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, so they have a lot of benefits that the frontline officer doesn't have. What do you say to the public? Because what I hear a lot, too, especially litigants, not lawyers, folks that are in the system, that these cases get continued. And a lot of times, you know, there's something set at 10 a.m. and the judge shows up at noon. And,
right.
You know, and there's this issue looming out there where, thankfully, this is not, you know, the majority of judges by any stretch of the imagination. They're otherwise hardworking people. But we have some that just don't even show up. They don't go to work. You know, this is like a rental income. You know, it's like mailbox money to them. They show up when they feel like showing up. And it's reflective of their docket. Their docket is like 3, 4, 5 times what the average is on the bench. And it just seems like, is everybody's hands tied? They can't compel these people to work?
I mean, yeah.
You know,
and I think
at one time I had over 1,700 employees. I always felt it was my obligation to make sure that they showed up and worked every day.
Right. And if your employees at that time didn't show up, within 20 minutes, there'd be a phone call made. Where is he? Where is she?
Yeah.
What's going
disciplined.
On? You know, there's a right. Of course, they would face consequences for that. And I think the problem with the judiciary is the public doesn't even know. Most of the public doesn't realize that we have judges showing up to work at 10:30 and who are done by 12:30. Most of the public would never have any access to information. Like, for instance, if we were to break it down by sections of court and say Judge A granted 722 continuances last year and, you know, only had 3 trials. Those are things that the public should be more aware of and that a judge should be forced to answer questions about. Why did this? And honestly, from the defense side, I'd be asking the same questions. Why is my client sitting in jail for 2 years waiting just to get to trial or to a resolution of his or her case? Those are all things that are controlled solely by the judge. Only the judge can grant or deny a continuance. So if a case doesn't move, it's the sole decision of the judge whether or not that case moved or progressed along. Same thing I like to say about the setting of bonds. That's the sole decision of the judge. Whether to give probation or jail, the sole decision of the judge. All of these decisions have grave impacts on the entire criminal justice system and on public safety, but nobody scrutinizes them. Nobody has any idea or any access to data that gives the public a general idea of what's really going on in criminal court. And when there is something brought up to the judiciary, nobody ever hears about it. Nobody ever knows, and we would have no idea if the judge was sanctioned for it or not. So, again, you know, accountability in the judiciary is becoming important. As we see crime spiral, people want answers. And it's not, you can't always just point the finger at the police. And you can't just point the finger at the DA. The judges have to be brought into that equation. They bear one third of that burden as well.
I love this text, and I know you're going to love it too. Some of those judges need to be mentored by Judge Dennis Waldron. He could show them how to show up on time and how to move a docket. And for the listening audience, he would walk into court, I think at 8:30, correct me if I'm wrong, Laura.
Correct.
And announce to the court on the record, Judge Dennis Waldron is here, ready to take up the matters of this section of court. And I'm looking around and there's nobody else here.
Correct. I've witnessed that myself. He will take the bench on time, regardless of whether anybody else did. Well, look, that's when, you know, it was a different time when people took pride in their work. And he did. He thought it was important. He recognized the importance of his role. There were several judges like that. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't have as many sort of taking pride in the things they do and realizing the significance it has on the community.
Another text, as a lawyer, nothing is more offensive than showing up for a scheduled 9 a.m. hearing and having the judge walk in at 10:30 or 11 a.m. So true.
Oh, it's right.
I hear that all the time. And I wish,
you know,
the Judiciary Commission and others, you know, could deal with that.
We used to say as lawyers, you know, it was sort of a joke among the lawyers that we didn't know what happened, what kind of what happened when that robe went on. It must have had some sort of power because suddenly people thought that they could just, you know, show up whenever they wanted, make people sit for hours, take a 2-hour lunch break and not tell anybody. I mean, that's not a rare occurrence, unfortunately. It's And it shouldn't be. The profession should come with a level of integrity and respect, and that's what people and the public expect. Until you go in there and see it yourself, you don't realize what's going on a lot of times.
Thankfully, it's not the majority, but
correct.
Because the quickest way to a safe and secure community is the efficiency of an entire criminal justice system. Efficiency, all in caps, for sure. Laura Roderick, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your insight and your time. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too. Thanks.
And you recommend voting for Amendment number 1, obviously. All right. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.